Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new season of The Kernel of Truth. I'm your host, Brian O'Sullivan. With me is Rupa Prabhu, the Chief Linux Architect at Cumulus Networks. In this episode of Season 3, we're talking about production-ready automation with our guest, Justin Betts. Justin, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hey, thanks, guys. Happy to join you. Thanks for having me. I'm Justin Betts. I'm a technical marketing engineer with Cumulus, but still not used to having marketing in my title. Very much a classically trained Cisco engineer, so really excited to talk about the PRA stuff, man. Yeah.
BGP debugging in Latin, the classic. I'm just kidding.
That's RFCs.
Yeah. So the first thing, we're talking production ready automation. That kind of raises the question, what does that mean? When we say production ready automation, what does that mean? And I will say this quickly, because this is something, you know, we've done this podcast for a while. It's definitely an industry podcast. We're talking about a lot of industry things. We don't think this is an exception to that rule. This is definitely something important in the industry. This in particular is something that kind of is being done at Cumulus. So it's a little bit different in that it's not based on an RFC or based on a standard. But so when we say production ready automation, I mean, Justin, what can you kind of give us some background on what we mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially, you know, a push button operationalized data center. You know, it's an example of, a golden standard configuration. Infrastructure as code, you know, production class automation, and then an example of CI/CD testing on GitLab, you know, all for free and open source. So yeah, it's available to run locally if you've got your own Vagrant, you know, libvirt environment. And the base topology is what runs on our cloud demo platform, so you can deploy and test a lot of it there too.
Right. And so, you know, you talked a little about the motivation or kind of hinted at it, I would say, in that you said, you know, customers can run it. So let's talk about that. Customers are looking to get into automation, looking to beef out their initial on-ramp testing of new solutions and things like that. I mean, can you kind of talk to that? What's our goals behind it? What are the customers' goals for using it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a couple really nice, elegant solutions that all came together at once. I got to give credit to my leadership and technical marketing. Shout out to Pete Lumbus for noticing that we've got sort of a classic, like, two birds with one stone opportunity here. I think it's really a problem of a couple things. As a vendor, we try to produce demos that we want our customers and prospects to find and use. And, the idea is naturally that those demos will generate leads and interest and sales, but you know, the hidden cost we found there is maintenance. You know, there's so many dependencies and assumptions and, quite frankly, shortcuts that get made when you're just trying to build a demo that tends to be pretty narrow in scope. So, you know, for all those number of reasons, you know, we'd find that demos would eventually break. And we'd never know until, you know, either a prospect would try it and tell us that it's broken, which is something that's really embarrassing, or maybe one of us would stumble upon it and see that it's not working anymore. So, you know, that's problem number one. That's sort of like the demo maintenance problem. And then the other thing was something you're touching on, like, you know, over time, you know, with both feedback from our customers and then a big dose of empathy among us internally, you know, Cumulus hadn't ever really delivered an idea of a golden standard solution or best practice architectures. So, you know, our docs are great, but, you know, they're pretty piecemeal. They're a bit disjoint. You can't really glue them together that well for your own use cases. You know, it's good for docs, but, again, it's pretty hard to glue them together. So, yeah, we need to provide something, you know, complete with tangible examples of these types of visionary things that we tend to talk a lot about. So, you know, examples of automation that you could take right into your own operations was a serious gap. And then to further drive that home, you know, our consulting services group noticed that automation, it tends to be the top need or top ask when they're doing onboarding. So, you know, why not open source these examples and templates, you know, give everyone a head start, get this knowledge out there.
And I know, Justin, you've talked and written a lot about PRA in the last few days, and you talk a lot about CI/CD with this PRA. So as I understand, customers, you're making this easier for the customers to actually take this code and try to run it in their CI/CD pipeline, right? Or integrate into their CI/CD pipeline. And there is, you guys also use CI/CD to keep developing these and maintaining these production-ready automation scripts on GitLab or whatever. Can you describe a little bit on what platform and how this benefits us in developing these and maintaining these and also to our customers?
Yeah, I mean, the benefits are multifaceted. I think my favorite part of it is definitely the CI/CD part. So when we talk about how CI/CD works, the way that it works in our use case, what we call a demo is really like an end product. It's really a solution or an architecture, something like EVPN, VXLAN with symmetric mode. All the code that gets you to that final endpoint is really in two repositories, but they're linked together. The blank base topology and the vagrant file actually stands up the simulation. That's what we call the CL demo too. And then the automation that goes in and configures those blank devices are their own repos. So, long story short, when a change is made to any of those repos, it really starts with a push to GitLab. And once you're done working on and testing your changes locally, they get committed, they get pushed to the remote repo. GitLab detects that a change has been made to your branch, and then it creates a set of these CI jobs in a pipeline, based on how you've configured the GitLab CI file. And we've got examples of that. So we've got a pipeline built for you too.
Does the pipeline include only the virtual instances or hardware instances as well?
It's virtual instances today, but it's something that's really easy to carry over to, hardware instances. That's what's great about Chemos VX. It's such a robust, high-fidelity simulation platform that you don't really need to worry about having to make any changes like MAC addresses or, device naming identifiers when you go from a virtual environment to, real hardware environment. You can set it all up one for one.
Okay. So if we think that if a customer has a test lab with hardware switches and so on, we should be able to replicate the same GitLab CI/CD into their premises, right?
Correct. Yeah. The first step would be modeling that, in a virtualization environment. That's sort of that's a little bit hand tailored. That's a little bit hard. And depending on how specific you want to get, that can be quite a bit of work. Best case, you go all the way down to MAC addresses, and you can do that. You can simulate MAC for MAC address in your environment, so things are literally the same. And that's really powerful for you to be able to have confidence that when you take the thing from simulation, that it actually works the same way in production or in your staging environments.
Interesting. And GitLab is one, what do you say, one platform, but are there any other platforms? I know PRA is currently starting on GitLab, but are there any other CI/CD platforms that this could possibly work in the future with?
Yeah, so we've definitely got plans. Jenkins is really popular. We're testing Jenkins internally here, thinking about how we can help stitch that together and make this part of, that tends to be more of the more common de facto standard in CI is Jenkins. It's a little bit more flexible, it's a little bit more easier to use. And GitLab can integrate with that. So you could use Jenkins to orchestrate GitLab. So, there are those sorts of options available for you.
With that, just quickly talking about Jenkins and GitLab. Obviously, the focus of this, as you were saying, is to allow us to build out these demos, allow customers to play with and utilize these demos. How much learning are we getting just from it? Like actually building it out of the CI/CD, building it out as a potential. Using that sort of methodology, and how is that helping us apply those to real, customer deployments as well?
Yeah, I mean it's sort of like standing on the shoulders of giants. Each time we iterate through it, and each time we go through it, it gets better. Every time we use it, and this is going on already. It's like I said, consulting our professional services group uses these same golden standard repos as their starting points for their engagements. So, I mean, aside from that, the other learning opportunities we're getting are a lot along NetQ. I mean, the using NetQ for CI/CD is pretty novel. It's definitely always it's something that we've always had as a vision for NetQ, but we're finally delivering something tangible here. So, of course, through that process of integrating CI/CD testing with NetQ, we've definitely learned a lot about our own gaps and certainly the product and our workflow, how to improve it, what works better or worse for NetQ in that way.
So there is a testing part of PRA as well. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Is that only via NetQ, or do we have some validation testing with Ansible as well?
So today we deliver only examples with NetQ as the test, but it's all framed out to be able to provide Any other type of testing that you might want. If you want to do, because again, these tests are going to be very specific for your environment. NetQ definitely helps you with those network level tests. So, making sure that, the network is not broken. The network's still operational. BGP, VXLAN, those sorts of checks are what we take care of with NetQ. But any of the, application level stuff, or want to make sure that certain endpoints can absolutely ping each other. That's not something you can do with NetQ. NetQ can trace and give you, one level of confidence there, but you certainly will have to write your own unit tests that are specific to your own environment. And that's all framed out. If you want to do it on the out-of-band management server, or if you'd like to do it from the NetQ server, we've got that blocked out for you. All you've got to do is write your code, write your own checks there.
Cool. And can you elaborate a little more on the technologies that we use or tooling that is used in or which we are promoting in this particular production-ready automation suite?
So there's lots of ways to do this. That's really kind of what makes this topic so difficult, I think, is there's really lots of ways you can do it. What's in automation or infrastructure is code. It's one of those things that's pretty ethereal, pretty hard to get your arms around if you've never really worked with it before. So, and this sort of ties into the technologies that we use. So, our choices here are, we use Ansible as our automation engine. That's a no-brainer just because of our story being so close to Linux. Ansible's become the de facto automation engine for Linux in general. So in the server world, Ansible tends to be king. And it works extremely well in Cumulus Linux, all the same. All the core modules work just the way you would expect them on a server. So unifying that operational model is extremely powerful, and that's why we chose Ansible for that. But that also then guides sort of what the infrastructure as code looks like. In our case, Ansible relies heavily on Jinja templates and then like variable files. So that's what this version and our example of infrastructure as code looks like. So when you go dive in those repos, you'll see inventories with group vars, and you'll see a templates folder with Jinja templates. And that is really what is the infrastructure as code. So the final config that gets actually rendered on the devices, that actually lives on the devices, doesn't exist in that exact form. Like, you don't have exact copies of running configs in the source repos. It's the structured data files, it's the structured variables, and then the Jinja templates that end up producing that final running configuration on those devices. So, again, those technologies are great for that's the automation side. On the simulation side, it's libvirt and Vagrant. So Vagrant orchestrates the libvirt environment. Vagrant is really just an orchestrator. It just sort of stands up boxes in different orders, provisions them, and does certain baseline stuff for you like that. So those are the two tools we use for simulation. But yeah, that suite tends to be what we've gone with. So Ansible, by way of Jinja, libvirt and Vagrant tends to be the core of the technologies there.
Yeah, so for a disaggregated system like ours, is it fair to say that the Jinja you have Jinja templates for each of the components, like the FRR suite to generate FRR config and maybe network interfaces and so on?
Yeah, so big shout out to David Marshall and the consulting organization, our professional services group. He's sort of the mastermind behind, that how those variable files and how we've broken all that up is sort of the secret sauce about what makes this a really great example of infrastructure as code and automation. So yeah, in our example, that's what we've done. So we've sort of broken those features. The Jinja templates can, be children. There's inheritance in them, so we can call other templates inside of other templates. So that's sort of how, a lot of those configuration files are built. We've got more structured, more built out, more granular feature by feature template. And then you can add and remove those as you need those features in a particular Ansible role. So I don't want to spend too much time talking about Ansible roles and leading an Ansible 101 class here, but
Well, to that point, I mean, from not the Ansible roles, we don't need to talk about that part. But you talked about the templating, you talked about the fact that it's open source. Certainly, if a customer wants to run it as is, it's there. They can run it as is. They can use it to set up the environment. But if a customer wants to go beyond that, and make changes to it, make it custom to their environment, whether we're customizing it or they are customizing it for their own environment, I guess two questions. Number one, it seems, at least from the openness and the open source, that that's not an issue. But number two, how do they kind of go about that? And are customers looking to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Customizing this is definitely something you need to have a little bit of an understanding of how the gears work in the machine. So yeah, things like Ansible roles, you know, the group variables and the Jinja templates are really the key components that you need to understand in order to be able to translate this or extend this for your own use. It's really not that difficult. I mean, if you've done any amount of scripting, you know they're all the same. The syntaxes are just slightly different. You know, all of these other scripting constructs are essentially the same. Ansible really isn't that much different. And the idea of variable substitution is basically all templating is. So these really aren't difficult concepts to understand, especially if you've never worked with them before, such as myself. I mean, to call myself out, I mean, I was a very classically trained Cisco engineer. My CCIE is still active. So, you know, when I joined Cumulus a year and a half ago, my background had been in security and VoIP, and that's such a large ecosystem at Cisco that I had like almost no experience in automation and being in that part of the Cisco ecosystem. So, you know, but again, I don't consider myself a genius. It's sit down, take a look at the code.
But it sounds like the way that it is configurable and customizable is not, this isn't something that was done by accident, right? This is something that as we were talking about how best to do this automation and get it production ready, that was a key part of it, because you know, the open sourcing and the publishing everything in GitLab and all of that, so presumably you know, you're talking with more customers on this than I am, but presumably that's resonating with them. I mean, are folks, you know?
Yeah, I've been on a couple calls. Yeah, we've definitely seen some interest. I've helped a couple of our sales folks set this up for some customers. I know there's interest out there. We're getting more stars and forks on the GitLab repository too. So I know people are copying and using it. So yeah, there's definitely evidence out there that it's being used. And again, David Marshall did an excellent job on structuring those variable files in a way that's concise and clear. I mean, one of his big mantras was we shouldn't have repeating variables anywhere. If you need to make a change to something, you should only need to make it once. Make that change one place. But we sort of have these like more abstract concepts that we need to apply to, like the concept of a rack. Like we had to codify a rack into these variable files, because really that matters for like MLAG and like, you know, help simplify configurations. You're going to have a lot of redundant configuration between two switches that are in an MLAG pair at the top of a rack. So, you know, we don't want to configure the same thing like VRR or, any other configuration thing that we're just going to copy to the other device. We don't really need to do that. We don't really want to do that. So, yeah, quite a masterpiece of how those things are structured, and if you take a look at it, it all makes sense. We try and really tie it to the notions of real world things like a rack. So of course, if you think about a rack, you're going to think about, you know, each gateway at the top of the rack and what CLAG is means for that rack. It's really really pretty elegant.
Well, just the fact that it has forking in and of itself, and certainly Rupa and I have had a bunch of conversations about this and a bunch of podcast episodes about this, but. I'm just a software guy at heart anyway, but eventually all this stuff is software, and I think this is yet another thing. This is just me making a statement, which you guys can agree or disagree with, but this is yet another case of things just moving to just being software. So it's there. You can fork it. You can modify it as needed. You've got all the templates and stuff, and that I could be talking about production ready automation, or I could be talking about any one of, I'm sure, I was going to say thousands, but millions of other things inside GitLab. And
it's all code all the way down, Brian. It really is.
That's right. That's right. Plus turtles.
It'll be nice to see a community around it and see customers contributing back or so on, right? I'm sure we'll have more use cases and it'll grow organically, which is nice.
Yeah, that's sort of the idea. And that's why we've structured this in the way that we have. So we've got the base topology, and then, you know, the community can build onto these however they want, you know, and we'd love to see the examples. So, you know, if you've done something cool, we want to know about it. We'd love to show it off. Maybe we'll build it in.
Well, so okay, so we've talked about the, you know, the nuts and bolts of it and what's there and the other bits. So from a networking side, let's you know, put on the networking hat instead of the Linux and software hat. What are the kinds of things that people are doing with it? What are the networking environments that they're sort of setting up and testing out and automating in this case?
So we've got three officially supported golden standard demos out there right now. So I mean, everything's going to be a variation of those three from here to start. So we've got they're all EVPN VXLAN based. It's just a matter of how you want to do routing in that environment. So one is just a pure flat layer 2 VXLAN network where you may route on devices that are sort of external to the fabric. Normally, it would be like most customers do it on a pair of firewalls or load balancers or, you know, some sort of policy device, so to say. Second one we've got is centralized routing, and that's where you do the routing for the hosts and the tenants at a central point in the fabric. Usually, it's on the border or edge leafs. They perform all the routing for the environment. And then our last and most popular one is the EVPN symmetric mode. I think that's the one that's got the most stars and forks on the project right now.
And that's much more distributed routing as opposed to the
Yeah.
centralized.
It tends to take the shortest, most efficient paths. Traffic tends to be most efficiently routed through that environment. And yeah, again, that's another one of those just super elegant Swiss Army knife solutions. It's like it tends to just check all the boxes for all the use cases and all the workloads. So it's a great place to start from. You know, if you don't know what you want, start there. Chances are good that that's going to check all the boxes for you. And you know, if it doesn't, there's probably something that we've got for you, no matter what.
Yeah, and I guess to that point, one of the things, you know, certainly much of what you're describing, or most of what you're describing, is data center focused, as you know, a lot of what we do here is. But with kind of the advent of newer modern chipsets and boxes that are campus boxes that are EVPN VXLAN capable, certainly, you know, this is again more of a statement of question. I got to stop doing that. But certainly, the symmetric routing stuff isn't necessarily DC centric, right? It is something in an EVPN campus environment could be used there as well, presumably, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the designs between campus and data center are label deep. I mean, if you really think about it, you can design a campus like a data center, and then the model translates super easy. You know, it just depends on how you want to abstract that. You know, these repos and these configurations would easily be able to apply to be able to be applied to a campus deployment. You just might have a little more customization in what the topology looks like, so to say, or what the inventory looks like, and the technology that you're going to use. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, these things can be carried over into a campus set, because I'm of the opinion that our campuses are going to look more like data centers in the coming years here.
So, I had a question on the templates itself and variables that you've talked before. How do you, if a customer wants to customize it to his own environment, how do you deal with speeds and feeds, you know, speed and port names, and all these become variables? I mean, if we pick a Jinja template today from PRA and try to map it to a hard node switch of a different speed and so on, are these all handled with variables? Just curious how easy it is. I've not seen one.
Yeah, I mean, it could be done either way. You know, you could do, if you wanted to customize things, if you wanted to get that granular, like have differences across the network, you could do that in the variable file and apply different speeds to different devices on different ports. That would be something that you'd want to put in, you know, the structured variable files. If it's something that, you know, doesn't need to be unique, if it's something that's extremely uniform, that's something you could put in a template. Because, you know, templates are going to be applied universally. You don't have any ability to really customize them unless you're calling a variable from the variable file. So, yeah, I mean, those are the sorts of things that's the decisions. Those are decisions you make when you're customizing it. You know, will I need to customize this uniquely in my environment? Probably a good candidate for a variable. If not, probably a good candidate to be in a template.
Hard-coded.
Hard-coded in a
Okay.
template, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So if a customer takes this, I mean, the first step in adopting a PRA for them is basically looking at all these variables and templates and trying to see how they map to their own topology, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. Is you know, really the core, the quick start guide would be, you know, little crash course in Ansible roles, inventory, and group variables. That's really all you'll need. It's really not a lot of material. It's not something you'd need to spend a week in an Ansible bootcamp to understand. It's really those three functions in Ansible, though, that drive, that are the core of our production-ready automation. And that's all you'd need to understand to be able to customize it for your own. Yeah. And once you get an understanding of that, you'll understand the rationale behind those, why the variables are laid out in that way. Like, that becomes obvious once you, well, you know, once you do understand, you know, how these things are rendered, a bit about how that process works. It's then you really understand the elegance, and it becomes easy to, it becomes quite easy to optimize and customize.
Okay, cool. When a user or a customer is trying to look at PRA, I mean, do we have a way to for them to test in our environment before they even consider, you know, adopting it or customizing it? How does that work?
Yeah, there's a couple options. You know, you can definitely go hard mode and do your own Liveret Vagrant environment. But that's not necessary. You know, we've got this set up on our Cumulus in the cloud, on our virtualization platform. We can take care of all that sysadmin complexity for you. We just give you a push button blank topology. So in our repos, you know, we've got the blank topology. We call that one CL demo 2. When you get a blank slate, when you get a Cumulus in the cloud demo, that's what you've got. You've got exactly CL demo 2. It's the same devices. It is literally a CI pipeline run from CL demo 2 that produces the images that run on AIR, that run on our Cumulus in the cloud platform. So you really do have the same thing. You have the same platform and the same common base topology as you would if you downloaded it and did it yourself. What we've gone even a step further, in case you don't even want to be bothered with automation, you can one-click deploy these demos. Like, so from the Cumulus in the cloud user interface, you can one-click deploy any of those three solutions, you know, golden standard solutions that I was talking about, and sort of get to kick the tires there. But if you do want to try it yourself, you know, you can avoid, you can not click the button, you know, do it a git clone and actually take a look at the files, run the Ansible playbook yourself and get a sense of what that looks like.
And this again, button is on GitLab?
The button is on the UI for Cumulus in the cloud.
Cumulus in the cloud, okay.
Yeah, so when you've got a simulation up and you're looking at it, on the left, there's a little dropdown to deploy any of those three demos. So you don't even really have to know anything about how to even run an Ansible playbook to get started and kick the tires on what these solutions look like.
And the other option you're saying is they can git clone it onto their laptop, and as long as they have all the other technologies, Liveret and all that installed, VirtualBox.
Or in Cumulus in the cloud. In Cumulus in the cloud, you know, you've got the same topology, so you can get cloned there as well. Again, the Liveret Vagrant dependencies are a little heavyweight. You know, it's something that if you're going to go full on and take this as part of your operations, we would definitely recommend, it would make a lot more sense to go through the exercise of, you know, procuring a server that can handle all of your nodes and simulation, set up your own Liveret Vagrant environment, have all that in-house. You know, but if you're just exploring this or trying to learn it, you don't need to go through that effort, because that is a considerable amount of sysadmin work sometimes to install the packages and sort of maintain the image repos and, you know, these sorts of things. Don't worry about it. Just come to Cumulus in the cloud. We've got all that done for you.
All right. Well, on that positive note, we will sign off. So thanks for listening to the Kernel of Truth. We'll post show notes on the Cumulus blog. You can, of course, find loads of educational material on Cumulus, as well as the open networking industry as a whole. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, so you'll be notified when the next episode is posted. And, of course, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. All right, thanks.